You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I've heard of some pretty unusual jobs. I've had a few of them myself, but perhaps none were quite as strange as that held by Alex Moore, the struggling actor who's played by Michael Urie in Jonathan Tolan's hilarious new comedy, Buyer and Seller. Alex has taken a job as the only sales clerk in a mall located in the basement of a barn on Barbara Streisand's Malibu estate, and his only customer is Barbara herself. The play has received rave reviews. Its run at the Barrow Street Theater has been extended until at least mid-October, and I'm very pleased to welcome both the playwright, Jonathan Tolans, and the play's star, Michael Urie, to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Hi. Thank you.
Jonathan, what got you thinking about writing a play with such a bizarre premise? Is it based on any fact?
Yeah, I mean, in 2010, Barbara Streisand put out a coffee table book called My Passion for Design that has pictures of this shopping mall in the basement of her barn. It's where she decided, instead of having closets to have all of her things, and she has a lot of things, she decided to have a street of shops like she had seen at Winterthur, the Decorative Arts Museum in Delaware. And I just thought that was very bizarre and kind of funny. And I made a joke to someone. I said, you know, how would you like to be the guy who has to work down there? And eventually it became a play.
So you haven't been down there, but you,
oh, no.
But she did photos. She does her own photography. Is she a good photographer?
Oh, who am I to judge? It looks good to me. I mean, it's all very impressive.
But nobody can go down there except her?
I understand that she takes people down there a lot. She's very proud of it, and she likes to show it to people.
Now, your title is a pun, but it's only clear if you read it, Buyer and Seller.
Yes, it's C-E-L-L-A-R.
Michael, you play Alex, an out-of-work actor who's just lost his job as mayor of Toontown at Disneyland, so he takes his job as a sales clerk in the mall. Now, you're a successful actor. You were a regular on Ugly Betty for 4 seasons, and since then you've been in quite a few films and plays. Can you still relate to someone in Alex's predicament?
Oh, yes. My days having money jobs, as we call them, are still very fresh in my mind. I've been lucky enough to have steady work as an actor, but I definitely had to trudge around, and nothing ever is quite as insane as working in somebody's basement wall, but I had some very strange jobs just to make ends meet when I was still, you know, pounding the pavement.
How did you come to be cast in this play?
Well, John and I knew each other from another play of his that I had done some readings of, and so we got to know each other. I was a huge fan of his from previous plays, going all the way back to high school, which he loves.
Yeah, to say that.
and so we worked together on a wonderful play of his that a few years back that is as yet unproduced. And then completely randomly were colleagues on a sitcom in the fall for CBS called Partners, which was a wonderful surprise. He called me and said, you know, that show you're doing, I'm doing it too. So we got to spend a lot of time in L.A. as New York transplants together. And that's when we really became friends. And that's when he slipped this play to me and had me take a look at it.
And you couldn't have done better.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Yeah.
You.
Can you describe what Alex's job consists of? We have this mall that has a doll shop, an antique clothes boutique, a gift shoppy, as he pronounces it, even a frozen yogurt machine.
Well, all that stuff is
popcorn machine.
All that stuff is true. I mean, all the details are things I actually got from the book. All those stores exist. She does have a frozen yogurt machine. So I imagine Alex would have to do a lot of dusting, a lot of cataloging, and just be down there for when his customer comes down to browse. And what happens in the play when they first start to get to know each other is his customer and Alex haggle over the prices, and that's how they get to know each other.
Now, in addition to Alex, Michael, you play all the other characters, including Alex's boyfriend, Barry, his immediate boss, Sharon, Barbara's husband, James Brolin, and Barbara herself.
Mm-hmm.
How much was creating the characters something you had to come up with the director, and how much is in the script?
Well, all of the characters are wonderfully described by John. And so I knew, you know, for example, Sharon is described as Cloris Leachman right after she found out Phyllis was canceled, which is so wonderfully specific. Everyone knows Cloris Leachman, and you can imagine that she wasn't thrilled when Phyllis got canceled. So that really like immediately gives you a face and a tone of voice. And so I sort of took that and ran with it. And then of course there's Barbara. There's plenty of examples of Barbara out there. And I'm from Texas originally, and I come from meat and potatoes type people. So James Brolin was pretty easy. And the biggest challenge was probably Barry, because I had, you know, two gay guys who were a couple, so they were compatible, presumably the same basic age, but they had to be vastly different. And I have several scenes where I have to play both of them. So that was kind of a challenge. That was probably the biggest challenge for me is figuring out how to be too real. Because the other thing is, like, it's real. John's written very real people in the play. They're not caricatures. It's not cartoony. So I had to really find the truth in them, and that was the trickiest one. Probably Barry finding a voice for him, and
that would be distinct from
Alex.
From Alex,
yeah, who's also the narrator. So he had to stay as close to me as anyone, because I had to be him the most, and I also had to. I have so much interaction with the audience. The audience is really a character in the play as well. So I had to. That guy, Alex, the main guy, really had to be as close to me as I could get.
Barbara Streisand is one of the most impersonated public figures ever, but you're not doing a Rich Little version. How did you work on getting her accent and the tone of her voice and body language just right without doing a caricature?
Well, I was very happy. And John has given me quite a boon in not having to do an impression. In the beginning of the play, I tell the audience... I sort of said
we
up.
Always know when you're Barbara.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
But we never wanted it to be an impression, because it just creates different expectations, and you wouldn't. I really wanted the audience to bring their own ideas of Barbara to interact with what we're doing, and they sort of create this mythical Barbara. And also, we don't have anyone dressed as Barbara. It's just Michael telling the story. And yet, it's very interesting to me how it always feels like the audience senses when she's there and when she's not there.
It's almost like a short story being acted as a play.
Well, it's funny you say that, because one of the things I thought about when I was writing the play is I thought of selected shorts on NPR. And how those the narrators, the actors reading those famous short stories, will slip in and out of character. And I wanted this play to actually work that way, as like a radio play, because I only had one actor doing it.
Barbara comes across as sympathetic, kind of lonely, but also somewhat ridiculous. Were you thinking about how the very famous can become prisoners in their own homes because they're recognized wherever they go?
Well, sure. I mean... None of us can imagine exactly what it must be like to live with the both blessings and burdens of fame like that. And I'm glad that you say it's sympathetic, because I have no intention of just bashing her. But I did have to write the play as if she's not in the room, because I had to have the freedom to really try to make it as real as possible and to sort of have both sides debating the Barbara myth. A dialectic. But I want her to come off as a real person.
Well, Michael, you open the play with a disclaimer in which you mention that Barbara Streisand is a particularly litigious person. Jonathan, have you gotten any feedback from her or her people about the way you portrayed her?
We have.
Because this is a real person, a real living person in a work of fiction.
Yeah. There have been discussions with lawyers, not hers. we have not heard directly from her. We have people who are very close to her and who work with her have come to see the show, and they say they love it. And so we're very happy. And they don't think the show takes any cheap shots. I personally would prefer that she just hear how loving it is toward her and not actually see it herself. Because while I think the show in total is very loving, there might be some things that Barry says about her that might not please her.
Which other people might have said as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, anything anyone can imagine someone has said about Barbara Streisand has been said and printed online.
Yeah. Mike, so was that a source of some of your material?
No, I had enough just from overhearing conversations for decades.
My guests are Jonathan Tolens, who has written a hilarious comedy called Buyer and Seller, which is currently at the Barrow Street Theater. Open run now?
Yes, we are now an open-ended run, yeah. As long as we can go.
Does that mean that you're not going to be doing any TV projects and other movies?
I would be thrilled to. I'm certainly open to it. I have my days free if anyone's out there and looking for somebody who can play Barbara Streisand. as you saw in the play, it's pretty taxing. So I sleep a lot, and I'm very happy just doing the play for now.
Well, Dutch, you have a new movie, Petunia, which is just coming out.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it'll be on demand and iTunes in the next couple of weeks, and then a movie that I'm in and also directed is already on iTunes and on demand, called He's Way More Famous Than You.
It's very funny. Mm-hmm.
So did you, Jonathan, thanks, did you have the script vetted by lawyers before you could get it produced?
About halfway through, I showed it to some lawyers, and they said that there was no reason, no one would have grounds to sue, but that wouldn't stop someone from suing. But that was kind of liberating, because at that point I kind of felt, well, no one's ever going to produce this play. People would just be afraid. This is about a public figure who has a history of suing people. So I thought, well, okay, I'll just make it. I'll write it for myself, and I'll write it to be as funny and as true as I can make it, and it'll be a great writing sample, and maybe it'll get me a job. And it's a great way to write, actually, because you're not thinking about how it's going to be received. And as luck would have it, David Van Asselt at the Rattlestick Theater and our producers, Ted Snowden and Dan Shaheen, took a chance, and they said, let's just do it.
The subject of why she's become such a cult figure in the gay community is one of the things you address in the play. Why do you think Barbara and Judy Garland became such symbols for at least one generation of gay men?
Well, I think they're actually two different cases. I mean, but what unifies them is that the idea of a kind of outsider who triumphs over their own feeling of being an outsider and not someone who would not be accepted. Now, Judy always had this incredible insecurity and pain. Barbara was the triumph over being a Jewish girl with a big nose from Brooklyn. So they're kind of two different versions of creating a persona that will triumph.
It's also the diva side of their personalities, don't you think?
Yeah, but I think that too.
The same thing that attracted a lot of people to Maria Callas.
Mm. Right. Well, it's always that creating a persona and a sense of beauty and being acceptance, even when you've been told in other ways that you are not.
Now, what about younger generations? Is Barbara and Judy still popular, or have we moved on to Lady Gaga and others?
Well, I think
Michael, you're the younger generation.
I think certainly Lady Gaga and Madonna to an extent are a new generation of that same kind of icon that gay men would gravitate towards. But I don't think they're as necessary in a way that. When Barbara and Judy were at their height of popularity and of gay icon, when they were their biggest people, gay men needed that. They needed somebody to look to. They needed somebody to love and to worship. And actually, I always think of what John Epperson, the great performer who plays Lipsinka. He did a talkback for us, and he said, I thought quite beautifully that they specifically Barbara and Judy, but also the beauties like the Marilyn Monroe, the great talents like Maria Callas, or the people who were so brilliant or beautiful, they were freaks. And that John says that he would sit at home and feel like a freak. You know, he's from the South, and he didn't know anybody like him, and he felt like a freak in his own skin. And so he looked to them as these unknown mentors and these idols, and I think we need that less now.
Are you looking forward to doing the same part all the way into October and maybe longer? Because actors usually enjoy the interaction with other actors, and the only interactions you're doing is with yourself.
Yeah. Well, I never get tired of the other actors.
Like all of your co-stars.
I love the – it's a wonderful cast.
Finally found a cast willing to work with
them. it's a really interesting question, because there are times when I go a little mad. But luckily, most nights the audience is – is surprising. They're completely different every night. It's a whole new. Every time I walk on stage, I think, who am I gonna make friends with tonight and tell this story to? What new group of 200 am I going to share this with? And some nights they're more surprising than others, and some nights they're not very surprising.
Well, you hope for someone like the guy who sat behind me when I saw the play. He had the loudest laugh possible. So everybody was laughing, but he was laughing louder, which I guess made it sound like this is almost like a laugh track.
It helps. It really like a lone wolf. You know, sometimes a lone wolf can mess everything up if they're not shepherding the audience.
But there's nothing worse than an early laugher, also, who like steps on a joke and the ill-timed cough. There's so many. These are the things that keep a playwright up at night.
So, Jonathan, I'm sure now because this play is such a success. First, it was at the Rattlesnake, wasn't it?
Rattlestick Theater. Rattlestick. And now it's at Barrow Street.
That was a short run. Have you changed it much since?
We just, kept refining it. We did some tweaks, some cuts. I rewrote a line or two. And we're always listening for things to, make it better. It's the great thing about theater. Projects aren't finished. They're abandoned.
And now I'm assuming your phone never stops ringing, producers saying, what are you going to give us next?
Yeah. I always wait for the call. Here's a lot of money to do something. But no, it's always, what are you going to do next? Yeah. No, it's been very nice. The reaction to the play has been wonderful. I've never written anything that's just about everybody seems to enjoy. So I'm very happy.
Do you think a play like this could do well on Broadway because it is really only one actor?
I think this play could do well anywhere with Michael Urie doing it. That's a whole business question, and I think it has to do with what theaters are available and what kind of deals could be done. But we're very, very happy at Barrow Street, and we can run a lot longer there.
It's been a wonderful year of
Our town ran there for 300 years,
deserved to.
Yeah, and they say it could still be running. The producers at the Barrow Street say that it could still be running if they wanted it to be.
Well, I thank both of you so much for being on our show. The play is just hilarious and clever and witty and smart. It's called Buyer and Seller, CELLAR. My great thanks to playwright Jonathan Tolins and to Michael Urie, who plays how many parts? Five parts?
Six or
we think
seven.
It's six, but two of them sometimes pretend to be other people. Roughly six.
Thank you both so
Thank
much for
you.
Being on the
you.
Show. The Barrow Street Theater, by the way, is on the corner of Barrow Street and 7th Avenue South.
7th Avenue. Mm-hmm.